Hare Krishna, Gaur Premanande, Hare Hare, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Thank you, Mitra Vrinda, for singing so nicely. Pundarik, Hare Krishna. Everyone got this handout. The summary, I was just noticing that the printing hasn't been very good. It's okay, so today, now we will do the 10th chapter. I think to cover it properly, like yesterday I have done 3 chapters, and like at least we have to do 2 chapters in each session. I don't know whether that will give us enough time to have question-answer sessions, because the question-answer sessions are also quite important and quite interesting. So the 10th chapter is describing the natures of fruitive activity. I'll just read out the summary of this chapter. In this chapter, Lord Krishna refutes the philosophy of the followers of Jaimini and describes to Uddhava how the spirit soul bound within the material body can develop pure transcendental knowledge. The Vaishnava, or one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, should observe the rules and regulations found in the Pancharatra and other revealed scriptures. According to his own natural qualities and work, he should follow the code of Varnashram. In a spirit of free from motivation, the so-called knowledge received through one's material senses, mind and intelligence is as useless as the dreams experienced by a sleeping person attached to sense gratification. Therefore, one should give up work performed by sense gratification and accept work as a matter of duty. When one has come to understand something of the truth of the self, he should give up material work performed out of duty and simply engage himself in the service of the bona fide spiritual master, who is the manifest representative of the personality of Godhead. The servant of the spiritual master should have very firm affection for his guru, should be anxious to receive from him knowledge of the absolute truth, and should be devoid of envy and the tendency to talk nonsense. The soul is distinct from the gross and subtle material bodies. The spirit soul who has entered into the material body accepts bodily functions according to the reactions of his own past activities. Therefore, only the bona fide transcendental spiritual master is capable of demonstrating pure knowledge of the self. The followers of Jaimini and other atheistic philosophers accept regulated material work as the purpose of life. But Krishna refutes this by explaining that the embodied soul who has come into contact with the segmented material time takes upon himself a perpetual chain of births and deaths and is therefore forced to suffer the consequent happiness and distress. In this way, there is no possibility that one who is attached to the fruits of his material work can achieve any substantial goal in life. The pleasure of heaven and other destinations, which are achieved by sacrificial rituals, can be experienced for only a short time. After one's enjoyment is finished, After one's enjoyment is finished, one must return to the mortal sphere to partake to lamentation and suffering. On the path of materialism, there is certainly no uninterrupted or natural happiness. So, the 10th chapter, that was the summary. The 10th chapter is dealing with the nature of fruitive activity. And the nature of fruitive activity leads to the understanding that the fruitive activities are useless. Isn't it? And fruitive activities are useless, but what is useful? What should be the goal of life? The goal of life should be devotional service unto Krishna. As I mentioned yesterday, time and time again, through all these discourses, all these discussions, Krishna is making one point very clear. That is, the goal of life is none other than pure devotional service. And in this way, we recognize, we become aware how fortunate we are. That somehow or other, we have found pure devotional service. We got the access to pure devotional service. Another thing will become clear through this, that this development or elevation to pure devotional service is a gradual progress. Is a gradual progress. First is karma kanda, fruitive, that prescribes fruitive activities in the Vedas. Then karmakanda leads to jnanakanda, speculative knowledge. The purpose of karmakanda of the Vedas is enjoyment in the material nature. And the purpose of jnanakanda section of the Vedas is liberation from material bondage. One is, initially, one gets involved in enjoying this material nature, then he comes to the platform of becoming or recognizing the importance of getting out of this material nature. First he enjoys, then he realizes the futility of material endeavors. A simple consideration can be, like if I ask you all, most of you have done many things in your life. Most of you have been very successful in many ways in your life. But did you feel that you have become perfectly satisfied? So materialistic endeavors ultimately leads to that realization that after all these endeavors, what did I get? This is not what I wanted. That is the nature of materialistic involvement. We try to enjoy, but we end up realizing that this is not what we wanted. We try to enjoy, but we try to get so many things, and we think by getting those things, by fulfilling all those desires, we are going to enjoy, but we end up realizing that this is not what I wanted. There was a time when you thought that it would be so nice to have a cycle. Right? You got a cycle, Then what is the natural reaction? This is not what I actually wanted. I want a scooter. Then I want a motorcycle. Then I want a car. First I got an ambassador. Or Toyota. Ambassador was not good enough. Toyota was not good enough. Now we want a Mercedes-Benz. But no matter whatever you get, do you feel satisfied? So this is the material nature. Therefore, an intelligent person realizes the futility of the materialistic endeavor and he realizes that it's all useless, waste of time. So let me get out of here. Let me get out of here. So that's why Karmakanda, when it comes to the platform of Gyanakanda, then the goal of Gyanakanda is liberation. The goal of Gyanakanda is liberation. One thing I will say, that the devotees who want to attend the seminar should come on time. This is not a free thing that you can walk in at any time. Like 10 minutes, and after that we'll close the door. No one will be allowed to come in after that. It's a serious business. It's not just walk in any time I want. If you want to participate, then become serious. Otherwise, don't participate. Okay, so this chapter begins. Krishna told Uddhav, taking shelter of me, with the mind carefully fixed in devotional service of the Lord, as spoken by me, one should live without a personal desire and practice the social and occupational system called Varnashram. So, Karmakanda section begins with Varnashram. Not just whimsically act in whichever way I want to act. Like there's a systematic way, following the scriptures. That is how one should follow the Varnashram. I mean, that is how one should be involved in fruitive activity. Very systematic. And what is that purpose? Varnashram, in this way we can see that Varnashram is the very basic foundation of human society. Varnashram is the very basic foundation of civilized human society. Those who are not following Varnashram, they are not actually civilized human society. This way we can see today's world is actually an uncivilized world. They may have invented so many different things for their comfortable living, for their physical comfort. But that is not civilization. It is giving some bodily comforts, but it is not uplifting one to the spiritual platform. Human civilization should be concerned about upliftment of the soul. Otherwise, extension or improvement of animalistic propensities is not civilization. That's what we have to understand. That's what the world must understand. Improvement of quality of eating, sleeping, mating, defending is not human civilization. That's animal civilization. animalistic civilization. These are the animal propensities. Shamanam etat pashubhi shamanam. Ahara nidra bhayamaitu nancha. Ahara means eating, nidra, sleeping, bhaya, means defending from fear, and maithunan, mating. Is simply, these are animal propensities. They are the activities of an animal. So that is why those activities have not been considered as part of civilization. The real civilization is spiritual development, and very basic approach to that human civilization is Varnashram. And today's world has lost it. That's why Srila Prabhupada considered that 50% of the work that he could not accomplish at that time was the establishment of Varnashram Dharma. So we have the responsibility. Prabhupada left it for us to accomplish. What Prabhupada has done is inconceivable, unique, incomparable. So what Srila Prabhupada considered to be 50% of his work that he couldn't complete was establishment of Varnashram. And that he left up to his followers. If Prabhupada did everything, then we would have had nothing to do. We would have been left without anything to do. So he left some work for us to achieve, something for us to do. And when you can, if we can establish Varnashram, that will be the biggest achievement. Then the world will become civilized once again. And what is Varnashram? Acting according to the modes of material nature. Everyone is motivated, everyone is influenced by the modes, and we must act accordingly. Someone is in the mode of goodness, someone is in the mode of passion, someone is in a mixed mode of passion and ignorance, and someone is in ignorance. And accordingly, there are four divisions. Chatur Varnang Mayashishta Guna Karma Vibhagasaha. The four varnas. Krishna says that I have created these four varnas. Mayashishtam Chatur Varnam. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. And Prabhupada is saying that since Krishna is created, in every human society there are these four classes of people available. In simple words, intellectuals, warriors, traders, workers. Which society doesn't have these four classes? Intellectuals, guides, warriors, the executives, traders, and workers. And now it's a matter of structuring them. They are there, it's just a matter of putting them in different classified categories. Then the human society will be properly structured. Like the brahmanas should guide, kshatriyas should manage, vaishyas should provide, and sudras should work. Everybody should work, but sudras should work under the guidance of others. These are the four divisions of human society. But unfortunately, by the arrangement of Kali, a new system has come about in the society. That is called democracy. Democracy. Prabhupada identified this democracy as demon crazy. By the people, for the people, of the people. By the sudras, for the sudras, and of the sudras. Because the human society has become the sudras. And what will sudra select? And that is what is happening, unfortunately, in today's world. And as a result of that, there is no recognition of the brahmanas. And ultimately what actually happened, that the society has collapsed. The varnashram structure of the society has collapsed. No recognition of brahmana, because you cannot identify them, who is who. Another thing is that, another unfortunate thing is that the society is being motivated by money, not by their inner desire and apparent ability. No one actually is being guided by what he wants to do. Everybody is thinking, what will fetch the maximum amount of money? And as a result of that, there is no room, no opportunity for the development of one's natural ability and talents. Person who wants to write poetry, he ends up becoming a factory worker. Like so often I find that somebody has some talents. Like I know one girl in America, daughter of a disciple. She's a very, very talented pianist. So much so that, you see, in America, the contest takes place from the local district, then to the state, then to the national. And she won the state competition. She came first in the state competition. And she participated in the national. Of course, she didn't become the top in the national. But she did not pursue playing piano. I was talking to her father the other day. And both the daughters, he had two daughters, both of them are very, very talented pianists. But they went for journalism. And the reason they went in for journalism, because by playing piano they won't be able to earn any money. Unless one becomes extremely fortunate, becomes extremely well known. So that is the unfortunate. See, she's such a talented musician, but she couldn't cultivate. And I was asking her, she was not at home. She was in Boston attending the university. I asked her, are you playing piano? And she said, no time. And I don't even have a piano here. Because she's staying in the university campus. So the talent is wasted. Why? Because, money was the main consideration. And that's the case with everyone. Anyway, so this is the unfortunate state of affairs. Therefore, Krishna actually pointing out that one should naturally become a devotee of Krishna, but without any personal desire and practice, he should follow the Varnashram system. Which means, according to his own propensity, he would act. Another thing about Varnashram, you know, another wonderful aspect of Varnashram? No unemployment. There won't be any unemployment. Everybody will be employed. Because everybody will become engaged according to his or her propensity. So in that kind of society, there won't be any unemployment. But in the Sudra society, when everyone is seeking for employment, if the boss says, look, no vacancy, that means no job. Does it make sense? Like the way the world, society is becoming degraded, can you understand that? How many of you think that this is really the problem of this world today? This side is not so well informed. Those who have accepted that gratifying the senses is the ultimate goal of life, all their endeavors are doomed to failure. Make sense once again? Those who think that sense gratification is the goal of life, ultimately, what will happen? Bhaktivinoda Thakur summed it up in just one line. Ebena bhojile jashoda suto charome poribelaje. If you don't serve the son of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna, because you're too attached to your sense gratification, you will feel extreme embarrassment. You'll feel extreme embarrassment. Where? At the end of your life. You will realize what a waste of wonderful opportunity. Such a wonderful opportunity became available, but didn't take advantage of it. Then Krishna is comparing this materialistic way of life is like a dream. In a dream, one sees so many things. But are they real? So this is also like a dream. We are seeing so many things, we are going through so many experiences. But actually, it is illusory. It's not really meaningful. Of course, it doesn't mean that this material nature is unreal. Prabhupada very strongly pointed out that material nature also is real. Because it's coming from Vishnu, it is real. Because it's coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like you remember, Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnam Evavashishyate. What comes from the complete and perfect is also complete and perfect. Because it's coming from Krishna, who is complete and perfect, this material nature also is complete and perfect. Only thing is that it is a reflection, it is not reality. Like, as a mirage, mirage is real. Right? Mirage may not be a pool of water. To mistake the mirage to be a pool of water is a mistake. But the mirage as a mirage is real. A prison house as a prison house is real. The prison house may not be a banquet hall. If you think that the prison house is a palace, then it's a mistake. Then it's an illusion. But a prison house as a prison is real. So in a dream one goes through so many different experiences, but ultimately it is all a dream. The only difference is we have two types of dreams. One is an individual dream and the other is the collective dream. When we are sleeping and dreaming, then it's an individual dream. Like the one who is dreaming, only he experiences. The person sleeping next to him will not experience the same dream. Whereas here, in this material nature, whoever is here will go through the same dream. That's a collective dream. In a way you can say it is Mahavishnu's dream. It's Mahavishnu's dream. He is glancing towards the material nature. And material nature is becoming agitated. And the living entities who are projected in this material nature goes through the same experience. Only as long as Mahavishnu is glancing towards the material nature. What will happen when Mahavishnu withdraws his glance? What will happen? Everything will disappear. So that is what this material nature is. But at this point in time, we are going through this experience. But what is the way to, how to utilize this experience? By waking up. And how do we wake up? We wake up in Krishna consciousness. We wake up by developing our relationship with Krishna. Therefore, those who have accepted Krishna within his mind as the goal of his life should give up activities based on sense gratification, and instead he should execute work governed by the regulative principles for advancement. So when one accepts Krishna in his mind, in his heart, as the only worshipable Lord, and establishes his relationship with him, he must follow the injunctions of the scriptures and act accordingly. So that is called Vaidhi Bhakti. Following the rules and regulations, he must execute his devotional service. And these activities actually forbids one. These activities actually forbid one from becoming involved in sinful activities. So these injunctions lead one to appropriate living, the life which is righteous, which is honest and spiritually motivated. Then it is describing the relationship between the spiritual master and disciple. The first consideration, of course, is the spiritual master. The spiritual master must be qualified. And what is the qualification of a spiritual master? The qualification of the spiritual master is he knows Krishna and he can make everyone understand who Krishna is. Because he knows Krishna, he can make others understand who Krishna is. There are so many people acting as spiritual masters nowadays. But we see that they don't really have any understanding of Krishna. They're simply misleading people. Mostly we find that people, especially in India, they're all mostly impersonalists. They think that ultimately it is the energy and the forms are illusory, imaginary. Krishna is not the absolute truth. Krishna is not the absolute. Absolute is Brahman. And the Brahma has assumed a form. And when the form is in the mode of goodness, it is incarnation. When the form is in the mode of passion, it is human beings. When that form is in the mode of ignorance, the animals and others, insects. Therefore, when a person transcends the mode of passion, especially sannyasis, supposed to transcend the mode of passion and come to the mode of goodness, they become Narayan. A human being, he is in the passion, mode of passion, but when he transcends the mode of passion and comes to goodness, the mode of goodness, he is in avatar, incarnation. Therefore they address the sannyasis as Narayan. You are a human being, now you have become a Narayan. It's a very unfortunate state of affairs in this world today. Like so many people misled because of the lack of education, because of the lack of information. Even in Ujjain, I have noticed initially when the people came to us, I noticed that practically all of them were impersonalists. they used to have that misconception. Brahman and the form is ultimately no form, and they have assumed the form, but they will become no form again. But we notice by coming in contact with us, their understanding has changed. Now they have become devotees of Krishna. Is Raghav Pandit here? He was the first one to join us in Ujjain when he came. He is not here. Nitin, what was your understanding before and what's your understanding now? Isn't it? The most of the people used to be impersonalist, thinking that Nirakar hai sab kuch, और साकार जो है वो कल्पना है, बल्कि बाद में सब निराकार हो जाएगा, राइट? सो इट्स अ मैटर ऑफ एजुकेशन. Whatever one tells, whatever one hears, he accepts that and he acts accordingly. So that's the first qualification of a spiritual master. Jai Krishna Tattva Betta Shai Guru Hai. One who knows Krishna, only he can become a guru. And then the qualification of a disciple, that has been very elaborately described here. The servant or disciple of the spiritual master should be free from false prestige. Servant of a spiritual master should be free from false prestige. Never consider himself to be the doer. He should be active and never lazy, and should give up all sense of proprietorship over the objects of the senses. So, ready to become disciples? I know some of you fit very nicely. Not some of you, most of you fit very nicely to this description. I notice that you have a very, very submissive attitude. You don't harbor false prestige, and active, never lazy, should give up all sense of proprietorship over the objects of the senses. Now this part Krishna is being a little heavy. Okay, but since Krishna said it, it's not I who am saying it. It's Krishna's words. One should give up all sense of proprietorships over the objects of the senses, including wife, children, home, and bank balance. He didn't say bank balance, he said home and society, possessions. Anyway, to become fixed up in spiritual life, that should be our goal. Like, spiritual life is very, very precise, and like that's why Krishna is giving the instructions for our benefit. One should be involved in household life. That is necessary. But that doesn't mean that one should become unnecessarily and overly engaged in that phase. In that respect, we know there are two expressions, grihastha and grihamethi. Grihastha is one who is situated at his griha, home, but his mind is at the lotus feet of Krishna. Grihamethi, no matter wherever he is, all his attachment is to his griha. We see sometimes people go to distant places and they earn some money. They work so hard just to send the money to home. So then where is their heart? In the griha. So our heart should not be in the griha. Although our body may be in the griha, but our heart should be in spiritual, at the lotus feet of Krishna. The servant or disciple should always desire advancement in spiritual understanding, should not envy anyone, and should always avoid useless conversation. Should always avoid useless conversation. One should see one's real self-interest in life in all circumstances and should therefore remain detached from wife, children, home, land, relatives, friends, wealth, and so on. Just as fire, we discussed about fire, the quality of fire. Just as fire which burns and illuminates is different from firewood, which is to be burned to give illumination. Similarly, the seer within the body, the self-enlightened spirit soul, is different from the material body. Fire and wood. The fire is coming from the wood, but is the fire same as the wood? No. Similarly, we must understand the difference between the soul and the body. Meaning, we should not identify ourselves with the body. Rather, we should recognize our identity as the spirit soul. Just as fire may appear to be dormant, manifest, weak, brilliant, and so on, similarly, according to the condition of the similarly, the spirit soul enters a material body and accepts particular bodily characteristics. Like the spirit soul is the source of consciousness. All the spirit souls have the same amount of consciousness. But when the soul is in a tree body, what kind of consciousness is there? Covered. When the soul is in an insect body, what kind of consciousness is there? When the soul is a bird body, little more conscious, but still. And when the soul is in human body, and the soul of a pure devotee, see, according to the fuel, just as fire takes different types of manifestation, weak, dormant, brilliant, effulgent. Similarly, according to the body, the consciousness becomes manifest. The spirit soul enters a material body and accepts particular bodily characteristics. So it is the body that is different, not the soul. Say a tiger's body is different from a cow's body. A tree's body is different from a spider's body. And the tree's consciousness is different from the spider's consciousness. And so on and so forth. But it's the body that is different. But the characteristic of the soul is the same. The subtle and gross material bodies are created by the material modes of nature. How many types of bodies we have? Very good. How many types of bodies here I meant is How many types of material bodies? Gross body, subtle body. Gross body is made of 5 gross elements, and the subtle body is made of 3 subtle elements. Everybody has these 2 types of bodies. Now these bodies are actually the product of the modes of nature. Subtle and gross material bodies are created by the material modes of nature, which expands from the potency, and this modes of material nature is coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Material existence occurs when the living entity falsely accepts the quality of the gross and subtle bodies as being his own factual nature. When, so, okay, it's like this. We have gross body and the subtle body. Right? Now, these gross and subtle bodies are product of, how did they come about? Say somebody has the body of an angel. Somebody has a body of an angel. What his subtle body is like? His gross body is that of an angel. He got the gross body like that of an angel because his subtle body is already taken the shape of an angel. How did the subtle body take the shape of an angel? Because of his activities. When he acted in a certain way, say, in this case, because he acted in the mode of goodness, his subtle body took the shape of an angel. And as a result of that, he got a gross body also, made gross body also that of an angel. So what formed this gross and subtle body? His actions, which are due to the modes of material nature. Where does the material nature come from? Where does the material nature come from? The material nature comes from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is the reality. See, the soul is different. Soul is spiritual. Then how does the soul become entangled in this material body? Or material nature. The soul becomes entangled in the material nature because he considers that his gross and subtle body are his real self. When he identifies himself, when he falsely accepts the qualities of the gross and subtle bodies to be his own factual nature, then he becomes entangled in the material. In simple words, what causes our bondage in the material nature? Simple answer will be identification with the body. But this body is not actually ourself. The body is a product of our actions of the past influenced by the modes of nature. Now, how to become free from this bondage of the body? How to become free? And Krishna is saying, by receiving proper knowledge. And what is that knowledge? We are parts and parcels of Krishna. Krishna is our origin, and we should become connected to Krishna. How to become connected to Krishna? Through devotional service. By understanding the Lord's pure transcendental existence, one should gradually give up the false vision of the material world as independent reality. I hope you all are not falling asleep, yeah? That's one reason why I used to give, I stopped giving two philosophical seminars. I started to give seminars on story-based, like Mahabharata, Ramayana. Now, I may be wrong, maybe you're so absorbed in listening to me. And how does one receive the knowledge? Okay, now let's go step by step. The last point was, what causes our material bondage? Identification with the body. And how can we become free from this material bondage? By receiving knowledge. How can we receive the knowledge? You see, how can we receive the knowledge? Simple consideration is by hearing submissively from an expert in this subject. Isn't it? So knowledge will come when we listen attentively and submissively from a qualified teacher. And what does a qualified teacher do? What is the qualification of a good teacher? Many of you are teachers also here, if not all. So what's the qualification of a good teacher? A good teacher simplifies the subject. He simplifies the subject. Makes it digestible. And the bad teacher makes it undigestible. So, good teacher makes it understandable, easily understandable. So that is the qualification of a qualified teacher. The consideration is upadeshanti te gyanam gyaninas tattva darshina. He imparts the knowledge because he has the knowledge. One who understood it himself can make others also understand. So that is the qualification of a teacher, good teacher. By hearing submissively from a bona fide spiritual master, one receives the pure knowledge. So then Krishna is coming to the point of Karmakanda. Jaimini is a sage who propounded a philosophy called Karma Mimamsa. Karma Mimamsa or Purva Mimamsa. What does Purva Mimamsa indicate or mean or propose? It says that enjoyment in the world is the goal of life. Now I told you, like, that is the first stage. Now the thing is, how to enjoy? How to enjoy? Through right action, you can enjoy. Say, for example, you go to school, study well, then go to college, university, and then you get a good job, you earn a lot of money, and you enjoy. So, this is the way. Do the right thing. But what is the right thing? To act according to Vedic injunctions. Vedas are giving different prescriptions in the Karmakanda section. So act according to those in those instructions and you will enjoy. So that is one way of looking at life, the preliminary part of the life. Enjoy, but not indiscriminately by acting irresponsibly, but regulated life following the injunctions of the Vedas. So that is the theory of Karma Mimamsa. But Krishna is refuting that by saying that enjoyment through sense gratification cannot be the goal of life. Because sense gratification has its limitation. And besides that, sense gratification is in the material platform. Unless and until one transcends the material platform and comes to the spiritual platform, he cannot be recognized as properly situated. So the goal of life is to become properly situated in the spiritual platform. And how is Krishna refuting that point? He's saying one may try to enjoy in so many ways, through fruitive activities, his desires may be fulfilled. See, happiness is connected to desire. You desire, when the desire is fulfilled, you consider yourself happy. But no matter how many desires you fulfill, but it always remains dissatisfactory. And even if we consider that even one has led a perfect life, full of happiness, but someday he has to leave everything. He has to die. So that cannot be the ultimate goal of life. Something that ends at certain point cannot be the goal of life, cannot be the ultimate goal of life. And then also we see that in reality, the fruitive workers are sometimes happy, but often unhappy. All our desires don't get fulfilled. Like in that respect, we can consider Chitraketu's anecdote. King Chitraketu was the ruler of the entire earth planet, but he didn't have any children. He didn't have any son. So he was very, very unhappy. By the mercy of King Angira, he got a son. He was happy for some time. But then the son died. His own queens killed the son due to envy. So, in one hand, the son became the source of his happiness, but at the next moment, the same child has become the source of his utter and acute suffering. So, this is the material nature. So, how can this be the ultimate goal of life? So, Krishna is pointing out that, fine, one may try to be happy in this material nature, but that cannot be the ultimate goal. And another thing is, does one get the result of his actions himself, or does it depend upon somebody awarding it to him? Who are actually awarding it? The demigods are awarding it. So when somebody has to always depend upon somebody, how can he be happy? It is up to the other person whether he will offer it to him or not. When a person is always under the superior control of another, how can he expect any valuable results from his own fruitive action? Even if people know how to achieve happiness and avoid unhappiness, they still do not know how the process by which death will not be able to exert its power over them. One may very expertly know how to enjoy, but does he know how to conquer death? If he doesn't know how to conquer death, then how can he be happy? Death is not at all pleasing, but it is going to come to everyone. So where is the possibility of being happy in this material nature? Who can say that he is not going to die? And when the death comes, what's going to happen? One may consider, Krishna is giving various options actually, covering all different points, sealing all the possibilities. One may say, okay, I will enjoy even after death. That's also possible. How can one enjoy after death? Very good. Elevation to heavenly planet. You get elevated to heavenly planet and you'll enjoy. Do you know what kind of enjoyments? Anyway, it'll come later. But the point is, one may be enjoying there, but when the pious activities are exhausted, you'll have to come back again. It is something like in vacation, you go to Spain to enjoy. But when your money is finished, or your vacation is over, you have to come back. So here Krishna is describing the enjoyments in the heavenly planets. Devotees don't think much of it actually. Having achieved the heavenly planets, the performer of ritualistic sacrifices travel in a glowing aeroplane. We have Airbus 380. Which he obtains as a result of his piety on earth. Being glorified by songs sung by Gandharva and dressed in wonderfully charming clothes, he enjoys life surrounded by heavenly goddesses. Accompanied by heavenly women, the enjoyer of the fruits of sacrifice goes on pleasure rides in a wonderful aeroplanes. Wonderful airplanes, which is decorated with circles of tinkling bells and which flies wherever he desires. We know it's not a big deal. Rather, sometimes we get tired of flying. I mean, we get jet lag. So what kind of jet lag we'll get there? And all that will last only as long as he has his fruitive results, piety in his credit. Kshine punne matta lokam vishanti. When the piety is exhausted, he comes down to the planet. Now this one also, I'll just read this whole thing. It's interesting and it's important to note. If a human being is engaged in sinful, irreligious activities, either because of bad association or because of his failure to control his senses, then such a person will certainly develop a personality full of material desires. So our material desires are actually the results of our sinful activities. He thus becomes miserly towards others. When a person becomes too materially motivated, he becomes miserly. That means he doesn't want to share anything with anybody else. He wants to possess everything for himself and doesn't want to give anything to anybody. Greedy, he becomes very greedy and always anxious to exploit the bodies of women. Because of his sinful activities, a person develops these tendencies, who tries to, he becomes miserly, he becomes greedy, he becomes violent to others, and he always tries to exploit the bodies of women. When the mind is so polluted, one becomes violent and aggressive, and without the authority of the Vedic injunctions. He slaughters innocent animals for sense gratification. Worshipping ghosts and spirits, the bewildered person falls fully into the grip of unauthorized activities and thus goes to hell, where he receives a material body infected by the darkest mode of nature. In such a degraded body, he unfortunately continues to perform inauspicious activities that greatly increase his future unhappiness. Now, his activities simply increases his future unhappiness. And therefore, he again accepts a similar material body. What possible happiness can be there for one who engages in activities inevitably terminating in death? So, this is how Krishna is warning us not to become involved in sinful activities. Do not become involved in sinful activities. Because the sinful activities will have its natural consequences, which will lead to intense suffering. Then Krishna is saying, in all planetary systems, starting from the heavenly planets all the way down to the hellish planets, from the demigods, all the great demigods who live for 1,000 yuga cycles, there is fear of me in my form of time. In this material nature, whether one is in a heavenly planet or hellish planet, everyone is afraid of time. And that is manifestation of Krishna in the form of death. Because everyone has to die. Therefore, an intelligent person will take that into as the first consideration. I'm going to die. Therefore, let me act in such a way that will make my life successful. I remember when I became a devotee and I was trying to convince some of my relatives. Their thing was, why do you want to take this life now? So my answer was that death is unavoidable. So we have to prepare ourselves for that part and beyond. And their response was, why you always think of death? Why think of death? Enjoy your life. But that's stupidity. An intelligent person will think about death as the most important thing. This is also, this part is, I'm reading the translation. Please listen carefully. The material senses create material activities, either pious or sinful. And the modes of nature set the material senses into motion. So, material senses create material activities. And what sets the senses into motion? The modes of material nature sets the senses into motion. The living entity, being fully engaged by the material senses and modes of nature, experiences various results of fruitive activities. So, we are not actually the doer. Our actions, as Krishna mentioned, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasa ahankara vimuratma kartaham iti mannate. In the material nature, everything is happening according to guna and karma. But bewildered by false ego, one thinks that he is the doer. The conditioned soul, who considers himself to be the doer, the conditioned soul who remains dependent on fruitive activities under the material modes of nature, will continue to fear me. Since I impose the results of one's fruitive activities, those who accept the material concept of life, taking the variegatedness of the modes of nature to be factual, devote themselves to material enjoyment and are therefore always absorbed in lamentation and grief. Always absorbed in lamentation and grief. Materialistic life will lead not to happiness, but lamentation and grief. I've seen many people very, very rich, but in constant anxiety. One anxiety is the income tax. I am earning all this money and now I have to give a big chunk to them. This is one thing that I could remember. Like, I know one person who was expressing his frustration that so much money the government takes away. And also we can see that how, in spite of making all the arrangements to enjoy, how they end up becoming miserable. I heard of one person, although he is very, very rich, he is very, very wealthy, but he can eat only a biscuit dipped in tea. He can't digest anything else. Not even a pure biscuit. He can't even digest a biscuit. He has to dip it in tea to make it soft and then he eats it. That's about his food. I mean, this material, I mean, it's very informative It's very educational to watch people, what's happening to them. In course of my travel and preaching, I come across all kinds of people. One thing I have seen, that they all are miserable. Whether they admit it or not, some of them do admit. Many of them don't want, but I can see how they are doing. Then Uddhav asks a question to Krishna. Uddhav said, "O my Lord, a living entity situated within the material body is surrounded by the modes of nature and the happiness and distress that are born of activities caused by these modes. How is it possible that he is not bound by the material encirclement? It may also be said that the living entity is ultimately transcendental and has nothing to do with the material world. Then how is he ever bound by material nature?" I'll read it again. So Uddhava is asking, "O my Lord, a living entity situated within the material body, surrounded by the modes of nature and the happiness and distress that are born of activities caused by these modes, how is it possible that he is not bound by this material encirclement? It may also be said that the living entity is ultimately transcendental and has nothing to do with the material world. Then how is he ever bound by material nature?" So the point is that, everyone is bound. But how can he become free? How can he become liberated? And these living entities are sometimes considered to be called eternally bound and sometimes eternally liberated. I am not able to understand, therefore, the actual situation of the living entity. You, my Lord, are the best of those who are expert in answering philosophical questions. Please explain to me the symptoms by which one can tell the difference between a living entity who is eternally liberated and one who is eternally conditioned. In what various ways would they remain situated, enjoy life, eat, evacuate, lie down, sit, or move? Do you remember in Bhagavad Gita also, Arjun asked Krishna, "Sthita pragyasya ka bhasha, samadhisthasya keshava, sthita dhish king prabhasheta, kimashita brajeta king." What is the symptom of a sthita pragya whose consciousness has been situated in perfect knowledge? How does he speak? And how does he walk? Brajeta king. So in a similar note he is asking, what's the difference between a conditioned soul and a liberated soul? So that Krishna will answer in the next chapter, that is chapter 11. I thought of covering 2 chapters today, couldn't manage it. Anyway, I thought I'll leave some time for some question answers to make you all wake up. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? Yes, Mukundari. এখানে দাও।
What's the reason behind
that is because India has gone through some very critical phases due to the age of Kali. One phase was the initial phase in the age of Kali was the Brahmanas. You know, some Brahmanas who were actually Rakshasas born in the Brahmana families, taking advantage of the age of Kali, he destroyed the Vedic culture. Rakshasa Kalimashrita Jayante Brahma Jonishu. The Rakshasas, Kalimashrita, taking advantage of the age of Kali, took birth in the Brahmana family. And they destroyed the Vedic culture. In the sense, they introduced, in the name of Vedas, they introduced all kinds of horrible practices. And one of the worst things was animal sacrifice indiscriminately. To stop that, Krishna came as Lord Buddha. And appearing as Lord Buddha, he rejected the Vedic literatures. Because the animal sacrifice was going on in the name of the Vedic injunction. So in order to stop that, the simplest way was to reject the Vedas. Then to re-establish the Vedas, he sent Shankaracharya. And Shankaracharya established his Mayavad. And by doing that, he defeated the Buddhism, but re-established the Vedas. And then other Vaishnava Acharyas like Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Nimbarka Swami, Vishnu Swami came and established the proper Vedic understanding. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and perfectly established the Vedic conclusion. Now, Shankaracharya's influence is still very prevalent in India. Although it was defeated by Ramanujacharya, but it's prevailing. And it is because of Shankaracharya's teachings, which was done with a purpose, like Tar dosh nahi teho agga kari dash, mayabadir bhashya sunile hoy sarbonash. It is saying Shankaracharya doesn't have any fault, because he is simply following the instructions of his master. Shankaracharya is actually Lord Shiva. And Krishna asked him, Mayavadam Ashachastram Prachanna Bodham Uchyate Mayoivo Bihitam Devi Kalo Brahmana Murtina. In the age of Lord Shiva is telling Parvati that in the age of Kali, appearing in the Brahmana family, appearing as a Brahmana, I'll establish a doctrine called Mayavad, which is a temporary doctrine. For the time being, it is needed to re-establish the Vedas. So that's why it says that he is simply following the order of his master. He cannot be blamed for that. But one who listens to the Mayavad philosophy, he is doomed. Mayavadir bhashya sunile hoy sarbonash. Okay, so that's why this culture is still so prevalent. And they're just So that's why, you see, those who are Vaishnavas, they have the right understanding. But those who didn't become, those who did not accept the Vaishnava philosophy, they're adhering to Shankaracharya's Mayavad philosophy. And that philosophy, I'll tell you, it is... Vedas have a theory called the theory of transformation, called Brahma Purinambad. Brahma has been transformed into Jagat. This material nature is a transformation of spiritual energy, Brahman. It's a transform. So it is a theory of transformation. But Shankaracharya established a theory over and above that called the theory of illusion. The word Mayavad actually means the theory of illusion. The difference is Brahma became transformed into Jagat. Brahma is real, Jagat is also real. Milk transformed into yogurt. Milk is real, yogurt is also real. But Shankaracharya established a theory that it is a theory of illusion. It is not there, it appears to be there. Right? There is no water in the mirage, but it appears to be like water. There is no snake in the rope, but the rope appears to be like a snake, and so forth. So with that, you know, it's not real. That's what it is. Brahma Satta, Shankaracharya's key word was Brahma Satta Jagat Mitha. Jagat Mitha. But actual Vedic concept is not Jagat Mitha. Jagat is transformed. Brahma is transformed into Jagat. Now you know how Ramanujacharya defeated Shankaracharya's theory. Shankaracharya gave the examples like mirage. There's no water in the mirage, but appears to be. So it is Mitha. Mirage is Mitha. And his philosophy is called Kevala Daitavad, Shankaracharya's philosophy. Ramanujacharya established a theory called Vishishta Daitavad. And his point is, fine, there is no water in the mirage. Somewhere the water is existing, that's why you're mistaking the mirage to be water. Fine, there is no snake in the rope, but somewhere the snake is existing, that's why we are mistaking the rope to be snake. So this world may be the mistaken concept, but the real reality is existing somewhere, that's why we are mistaking it to be that. And this is how he established that the spiritual reality is the real reality, and this nature is a reflection of that reality. Yes.
My question, you mentioned that democracy is for the Shudras, by the Shudras, of the Shudras. But it is by the Shudras, so for the ignorant man. But we see that all over the world, maximum countries are being governed by democracy.
Being governed by?
Democracy.
Yeah.
So, as you said, that 50% of the population is that. So in this scenario, when we have potential of democracy, and Varnashram is just opposite of this concept of democracy, isn't it that?
Well, if it doesn't too revolutionary, I will say that in order for Krishna consciousness to spread all over the world, in every town and village, democracy has to go. Democracy has to go. Right? Because, you see, Varnashram will not be possible in the democratic context. What to speak of Varnashram? In democratic system, there is no room for Kshatriya. There is no room for Kshatriya. Because a Kshatriya, you know, is by nature he is independent. He will have his own kingdom, which means monarchy. But democracy doesn't allow monarchy. Right? Like, for example, just, you know, nature-wise, consider a lion. What is the nature of a lion? He has his own domain. Right? Do you think, you know, a lion will be able to become equal to all? No. And so that is it, you know, like the, or in simple words I would say, in order for Krishna consciousness to spread all over the world, democracy has to make way for monarchy. People will realize that. They're already realizing. You see, what is happening, so what is the problem with democracy? First of all, the mass is ignorant. So how can the ignorant mass wisely elect a wise leader? Like, for example, will you allow the school children to elect their leader? Elect their teacher? Will you ever establish a system where the school children are going to elect their teacher? Whoever gets the maximum vote from the students, he'll become the teacher. What kind of teacher he'll get? Another consideration, will you ever consider that the airline's pilots are going to be appointed by popular vote? Whoever gets the maximum number of vote, he'll be allowed to fly the plane. If a situation comes to that, will you fly that plane? Now, if we don't allow a pilot to fly the plane without proper assessment of his qualification, just by number of votes, then what to speak of a car running a nation which is 100 times more complex than flying an airplane? Anyway, yes, Ramananda. I think he took it back there. Okay, next it. Yeah, Vinod Bihari.
Hare Krishna. When we talk about suffering, we say the humanity suffers. And my question is actually, who suffers? Because if it's the body is an air matter, and if it's the living soul is such a world, it is.
Good. Very good point. Yeah. The soul doesn't suffer. But unfortunately, the soul identifies himself with the suffering. Because he's identifying himself with the body, right? It is the body that is going through the suffering, but because he identifies himself with the body, the soul is suffering. Get the point? The soul should not suffer, because the soul's need is not this. Soul's need is not a Mercedes Benz, right? A soul's need is not a palace. The soul's need is not a beautiful woman. The soul's need is Krishna. That is the soul's real need. But because the soul now is identifying himself with the body, the soul experiences those activities of the body. Therefore, the thing is, when you separate your consciousness from the body, when the soul withdraws from the body, then he doesn't suffer. Like, for example, a person under anesthetics, the body is going through various, you know, treatments. The body is cut to pieces. Does one experience that suffering? No. Why? Because the consciousness is withdrawn. So as long as the consciousness is projected through the body's pleasure and pain will be experienced by the individual. He is not doing it, but he is identifying himself due to illusion. Right? He is not, you know, like the parallel will be prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasa. Actually, what is happening? One is simply an helpless puppet in the arrangement of guna and karma. But ahankara vimuratma kartaha miti mannate. Being bewildered by his false ego, he is identifying himself. He is thinking that he is the doer. Alright? Does it answer your question? Okay. Just Ramananda and then I'll take. There is a reason why democracy came, you know, and that is unavoidable. That, you know, democracy was actually unavoidable. Because when the kings became tyrants and totally, you know, exploitative, did not care for their citizens, then they revolted against them. And when they got rid of this system, what system they could establish? Like, could they appoint another king? Then they thought that he'll also be the same. Therefore, get rid of the kings. Get rid of monarchy. So what is the natural consequence? By the people, for the people, of the people. Democracy. It came in a natural way, it cannot be denied. But my point is, that can be better than the worst. Democracy can be better than the worst, but democracy is not the best. Right? The Varnashram is the perfect system, a civilized human society. Yes, Leela Madhuri? Yeah. Take the mic. Very good point. What is the easiest way to overcome that? And the easiest way is to surrender to Krishna and become engaged in devotional service. Right? And neglect, no, there is no question. In Krishna consciousness, you see, that what you said is another possibility. Like some people may think, neglect the body, because body is the cause of the bondage. Body is the cause of suffering. Therefore, get rid of the body. But that option is something like, there's a boil in the leg and it's causing pain, so get rid of the leg. So the proper approach to that is engage the body in the service of Krishna. Devotional service means engage the body and senses in the service of Krishna. By doing that, one shifts his consciousness from his body to Krishna. That's why Prabhupada used the expression Krishna consciousness. Our body consciousness is causing us the bondage in the material nature, and Krishna consciousness, shifting our consciousness to Krishna, will be the cause of our liberation from our bondage. All right? Okay. Diva? Diva Radhika, yeah. Will that apply to you?
Does not apply that more proceedings will then prevent the sacrifice that the government would send.
Actually, the sound is. आप क्या कर रहे हैं? ये sound एकदम बिल्कुल बकवास है. Go ahead. Democracy will? It will depend how effectively we are able to spread Krishna consciousness. Because if Krishna consciousness spreads, then eventually democracy will go. And democracy has to go to make room for Varnashram. But it can happen through democracy. You know how? If majority of the people become devotees of Krishna, then they will elect a Krishna conscious leader. And eventually the Krishna conscious leader will establish Varnashram. It's possible. So that's why it will depend how effectively we are spreading Krishna consciousness. Yes.
My question is related to Varnashram. And you mentioned
So if the system of Varnashrama were to be successfully established, how would an individual's natural propensity or nature be determined so that they could stop calling into Varnashrama?
Well, the brahmanical persons will be engaged in brahmanical activities. Kshatriyas will be engaged in kshatriya-like activities, and so forth. It is not that they'll act whimsically and independently. It'll be guided by the leaders of the society. They'll structure it, especially the king will structure it. And in Varnashram, three classes are independent. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. And only the Sudras are employed. So the Sudras will be employed in their activities by their mentors, by their leaders. Okay, so I will now take two questions from the internet. First one is from Guru Gauranga. Now he is in South Africa. Guru Gauranga Das, South Africa. Guru Maharaj Dandavats, you mentioned that improvement of material facility is materialistic civilization. Can implementation of Varnashram is also incorporate improvement of technology and material science? Or is simple living and high thinking, a simple living and high living, a pivotal part of Varnashram? Should we strive to live within the current structure, or should we proactively strive to change our life to be simple and Krishna-centered? Very nice. Thank you, Guru Gauranga. Very nice question. you see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's policy is Jukta Vairagya, not renunciation, but engagement in Krishna service, positive activity, in simple words. So when we do that, then everything becomes perfectly harmonized. Everything becomes perfectly harmonized. Like then, in whatever situation one is in, one will be engaged in serving Krishna. So if one is in an opulent environment, let him stay there, serve Krishna. If one is in an austere environment, let him also stay there and serve Krishna. So we are not voluntarily trying to change our situation, but we are simply utilizing in whichever situation we are in for the sake of pleasing Krishna. So that is the ultimate solution. And as you say, strive to change your life to be simple and Krishna conscious. Simple because there is no such extraneous endeavor to become extraneous endeavor to improve our material comfort. It is just whatever sthane sthitva shruti gatam. In whichever situation you are in, just stay there. But tanubhang manobhi, with your body, mind and words, you render service to Krishna. That is the principle of Krishna consciousness. And technology, advancement of technology and material science, yes, it can also be used in Krishna service, as we are doing. Krishna consciousness means using everything in the service of Krishna. Sankirtan means using everything in the service of Krishna. If it is there, if it is available, we won't reject it, but we'll use it in Krishna service. In that respect, there is a very beautiful instruction that prapanchika taya buddha হরি সম্বন্ধে বস্তু না মুমুক্ষুভি পরিত্যাগ বৈরাগ্যং ফলগু কথ্যতে। কনসিডারিং দ্যাট প্রাপঞ্চিকা তয়া বুদ্ধ, কনসিডারিং দ্য অবজেক্টস দ্যাট কুড বি এনগেজ ইন কৃষ্ণ সার্ভিস টু বি মেটিরিয়াল অ্যান্ড রিজেক্ট দ্যাম, ইফ উই রিজেক্ট দ্য অবজেক্টস দ্যাট কুড বি ইউটিলাইজড ইন কৃষ্ণ সার্ভিস, দেন দ্যাট ইজ ফলস রিনাউন্সিয়েশন, দ্যাটস ফলস রিনাউন্সিয়েশন। বাট হোয়াট ইজ পিওর ডিভোশনাল সার্ভিস? অনাসক্তস্য বিষয়ান যথার্হম উপযুঞ্জত, নির্বন্ধ কৃষ্ণ সম্বন্ধে যুক্তং বৈরাগ্যং কথ্যতে। অনাসক্তস্য বিষয়ান, বিং ডিট্যাচড ফ্রম দোজ অবজেক্টস অফ মেটিরিয়াল নেচার, যথার্হম উপযুঞ্জত, অ্যাকসেপ্টিং, ইউটিলাইজিং whenever and whatever can be utilized in Krishna's service, that is called Jukta Vairagya, positive renunciation. Rajkumar Ramanuja Krishna Das, Indore. Dear Guru Maharaj, thanks for your wonderful discourse. My question is, in spite of Srila Shankaracharya's writing Bhaja Govindam, why his followers do not accept? Well, one accepts only whatever he wants to accept. And so those who don't want to accept their service to Krishna or Vishnu, which is actually devotional service, then they kind of distort another meaning out of that saying of Shankaracharya. Bhajo Govindam, Bhajo Govindam, Bhajo Govindam Mudhamati. So their point is, those who are Mudhamatis, those who are stupid, they should worship Govinda. So, if you want to distort the meaning, yes, it's possible. Dhanashri, why didn't you ask the question yourself? You are here. Okay. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, Dandavat Pranam. Maharaj, you told in the class that a person who knows Krishna is only the guru, then what should we call our school teacher? You called him school teacher. Radharani Devi Dasi, Guru Maharaj, why was it necessary to re-establish the Vedas after Krishna came as Lord Buddha? For it was already and still is misused. Your humble servant, Radharani Devi Dasi. Yeah, this has been explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Ved na maniya bodha hoilo nastik. Because the Buddhists did not accept the Vedas, therefore they are atheists. Because the Vedas are giving us the understanding about this Lord. Now, without the Vedas, there is no way of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is why the implementation of the Vedas is essential. Now, you may say, Vedas are being misused. Yes, some people are misusing the Vedas. But at the same time, some people are absolutely utilizing the Vedas, like Srila Prabhupada. Right? Like, if the Vedas were not established, on which authority Srila Prabhupada established Krishna consciousness? If Vedas were not established, in which authority Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have established his Sankirtan movement? That's why the Veda is the very basic foundation. Okay, so I'll end now. Thank you all very much. Announcement. Announcement. Okay. Yeah, good. That is Bimal Krishna. So I also mentioned yesterday, today's afternoon session will start at what time? Sure? You all are ready? You want to sacrifice 1 hour out of your very busy schedule? Okay, tomorrow Ujjain Darshan will depart for Jagannath Temple since tomorrow we are going to have a very special morning session. How many of you know about the special morning session tomorrow? Okay, not that all of you know. So for your information, tomorrow Ujjain Darshan will depart for Jagannath Temple at 7:30 a.m. Breakfast and class, then visit other temples. Okay, all right. So we'll go to Jagannath Temple, the class will be there, and at the same time you'll have a darshan of Lord Jagannath. How many of you have seen Lord Jagannath? We have another temple here, Jagannath Temple. And this Jagannath is very, very special. You know why? Because this is the place where King Indradumna was the king. Do you remember King Indradumna? For whom did Lord Jagannath appear? And his kingdom was here. And we are the first one, after God knows how many years, established the Jagannath temple here in the kingdom of King Indradumna. For whom Lord Jagannath appeared. And tomorrow, after Ujjain Darshan, we'll come back for lunch. Thank you. Hare Krishna. And this trip, actually, Ujjain Darshan, will be only for non-Ujjain Vasis. Those who have come from abroad, it'll be only for them. Because those who are in India, they have the opportunity to come here and go there. So because like we have to, you all can come, everybody can come to the class in Jagannath Temple, but the tour will be only for the Bideshis. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.